Monday here on the Monday Morning Joe podcast on JoeBucksFan.com. I'm Steve Isbitz, one of the Joes here at Joe Bucks Fan, and this is my podcast, episode 3. How about that? We are so, there's no we here, it's just me. I'm so pumped up to be here after a game. A game! We got to watch freaking Bucks football on Friday night, and you know what? If you've been craving it for 7-plus months like I have, it's just wonderful. And it's also great to just have some film to go back and watch the game a couple of times. Just ecstasy, absolute ecstasy, even if it's preseason. Of course, we're presented here by Lakeland Auto Mall and Discount Garage Doors. Our great sponsors, Lakeland Auto Mall and Discount Garage Doors. At Lakeland Auto Mall, save $25, $50, or even $100 off your current payment during the Lakeland Auto Mall Ford Hyundai Summer Clearance Event. Plus, every new vehicle purchased is backed with their exclusive nationwide lifetime warranty. And every purchase comes with 1 year free maintenance. Now, I'm going to repeat that. Every new vehicle purchased is backed with our exclusive nationwide lifetime warranty. And every purchase comes with 1 year free maintenance. Tremendous opportunity, tremendous deal. You can get all the details from the dealer. But gosh, that is really an amazing opportunity if you start to think about that, what a nationwide lifetime warranty means. Shop online at lakelandautomall.com or stop by the new showrooms on West Memorial Boulevard in Lakeland, I-4, exit 28, just minutes from Tampa, Brandon, and anywhere in Central Florida, Lakeland Auto Mall, where they are exceeding customer expectations every day, and they're Bucks fans. If you go online, get your lowest internet price, which they only put their lowest prices on the internet, on lakelandautomall.com. Get your lowest price on a Ford, then contact Sean Sullivan, sales manager at Lakeland Auto Mall. Tell him you're a stick carrier and you're going to get an extra $500 off. Just tell him you're a stick carrier, extra $500 off at Lakeland Auto Mall. Get that lowest internet price and then go get your discount. And our other great sponsorship love goes to Discount Garage Doors. Discount Garage Doors, website dgdoors.com. Now that's where you're going to get your garage door repaired. They're going to do that for you. And they do new garage doors as well. But what an incredible company. Same day, free service call. So you can call today. They'll come out to you. And you'll get an estimate, a diagnosis. Most competitors in the industry charge for that. So this is a free service to get a full diagnosis. Good chance they can fix it on the spot if it's just a repair. And they're also going to beat any comparable estimate if you already got an estimate. They serve the entire Tampa Bay area, more than a dozen Florida counties. I think it's 18 or 16, I don't know, but well into Central Florida. And where Bucks fans live, Discount Garage Doors can take care of you. DGDoors.com is their website. You can call 1-800-866-420-DOOR. They're open 7 days a week. So let's say you know now you got a problem, but you really can't deal with it till Saturday. Call today, make an appointment on Saturday or even on Sunday, which is fantastic. Use your discount code JoeBucksFan for 10% off. Discount Garage Doors, wide range of new doors, family owned and operated since 2000, state licensed. Definitely give them a try. Really fantastic company. I wouldn't use anyone else until you get an estimate, a free estimate from Discount Garage Doors. Now the Buccaneers, speaking of garage doors, we've got people slamming the door on Jason Light's draft record, because now it's official that Roberto Aguayo is gone, and it was the biggest bust ever, or rivaling it. A lot of people, the anti-Light crowd, has been able to get some new life, because of course Roberto Aguayo was dreadful on Friday, as he really has been since he got here, and he was cut Saturday morning, which is the right thing to do. I'll say this, after he missed the extra point, I did write a story on JoeBucksFan.com while the game was still going on, time to cut Roberto Aguayo. And a lot of fans went wild on Twitter. That it really went kind of wild on social media because, oh, Joe, you're an ass. You're calling for the poor kid's head. All he did was miss an extra point. He hit the post. Big deal. A few inches. You can't just cut the guy. Yes, you can. And this was before he missed the field goal very, very late in the game. I've said this 100 different ways, but I'm going to try to make it as clear as possible now. I've written it on the website or talked about it on Steve Dumick's show months ago. really almost a year ago, when Aguayo first started to struggle significantly. The team, the head coach, has to trust the kicker. You have to have faith in your kicker that he can get the job done. The idea is to win a Super Bowl, not to develop a kicker. Kickers are not a position that develops, period. You give a kicker time to adjust, a rookie kicker, but you can't hope to develop a kicker. It's not something you do at the professional level. So the team lost faith in Aguayo, and rightfully so, because he was bad. They gave him another shot this year, and he had to be perfect. He had to show that he was past the mental issues, and I call them mental issues because the team called them mental issues. Nobody ever said the mechanics of Roberto were off. The coaching staff, the guys we're around, Nate Katzer, special teams coach, Dirk Cutter, all said it was in Aguayo's head. And they had nothing to tell him or teach him. And he's not hurt. So you know what? If you've got a kicker who's got mental issues, you can't trust him. He had a year's worth of time. You can't go into a season like that expecting to win a Super Bowl with a kicker you don't have faith in. And that affects the whole team. It really does. So it had to be done at that point because Aguayo, when he missed the extra point, he lost his wiggle room. Now, we don't know what would have happened if he made the 47-yard field goal late in the game, but it doesn't matter. He was already a guy who was not going to be the kicker. Even if they kept him, Folk clearly would have been had a massive lead in the kicking battle, and Aguayo would have stayed on the roster, I believe, if he made the 47-yarder. But it was never going to be the kicker this year once he missed that extra point, and that was the point. So there you go. He's with the Bears. What a drama it would be. What a classic Buccaneers soap opera it would be if he beat out Connor Barth for their kicking job. Barth didn't have the best year last year there, but, you know, okay. What a soap opera it would be if Aguayo won that job, comes back here week two, the home opener, Aguayo back in Raymond James Stadium kicking for the Bears. I mean, it's just a classic story. Would love to see him line up for a game-winning kick and shank it. That would just be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But I'll say this. A lot of people, I hear people saying, I feel sorry for Aguayo, poor kid. You know, I get that sentiment, but he's going to earn $500,000 this year, no matter what. He's young. He can keep working on kicking. He should be set for life in many ways if he plays his money correctly. What a head start you have when you're a young guy with a couple million bucks and earned a couple million bucks. So I'm not worried about Aguayo. I don't even really feel that badly for him. If he wants to straighten it out, he's got the means and the money and the ability to put the work in, and somebody will always give him a shot, I believe, because he was such a high draft pick. It's just the way it is in this league. If you're a high pick, you were a high pick for a reason. You'll always find somebody who thinks you're going to recapture that magic. So that's it. The Bucs are done with that. Nick Folk should be the guy, barring any problem. They brought in some sort of camp body kicker. I don't even have his name in front of me. It doesn't really matter unless Folk has a disastrous situation here or an injury. He's our kicker going forward, and I feel good about it. Absolutely. Now, in that game, before we get to the game, Jason Light and his record, he's 50-50. He's batting 50%, 500. In the second round of the draft. That's what Light's doing right now. Because in the second round, he's taken Austin Seferian, Jack Wagon. We all know his story. Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith. Those are two hits in the draft. Rock solid starters. Quality players. Roberto Aguayo, second round pick. So there's your 50-50 split. He's hit two. He's busted on two. Noah Spence, second round pick. Jury's still out on Noah Spence. He showed his toughness last year, showed some flashes of speed and pass rush moves, but that's about it. Guy can't play the run. If you watch that game, go back and watch the tape. Noah Spence has a run stuff in that game. A very good one. Got around the edge on the first series and had to drop the guy for a 2-yard loss. Excellent play. But he also got mauled in the running game as well. Tyler Eifert turned him around, which is a really bad look. And another time he didn't set the edge well and he got beaten there. So he's a work in progress in the running game, and the Bucs are very focused on stopping the run. You know, that was really the Achilles heel of the defense last year, 4.4 yards a carry. That was the bottom third of the league. That was more than a yard more per carry than Lovie Smith's Bucs allowed and in the year Lovie Smith got fired. So it was a big drop off in the run defense. And the Bucs like their corners. They believe in their corners. They got great corners. They want to get to those corners. They want those guys, they want those third and long situations where those guys are tested and can make some plays. Noah Spence, I think at this point, is a rotational player. That's what he is now. No shame in that. No crime in that. You can be a great second round pick being a rotational pass rusher, a specialist, getting eight, nine sacks a season. That might be Noah Spence, and that's just fine. But the point is Jason Light's 50% in the second round. And that's good. By NFL standards, that is good. Listen to Bill Polian ever on SiriusXM NFL Radio. He talks about this all the time. He goes into the percentages of hits and misses in the draft. If you're doing 40% in the second round, that's solid. I believe that's about the NFL average, 38, 40% hit in the second round. So Light's doing just fine. Yes, the Aguayo situation's magnified because it was a dumb pick in the sense that it was needless risk. It's one thing if you risk on a quarterback, which is the most important position, or a pass rusher. But to take a risk on a kicker, on a position where you don't need to take the risk because you can fulfill the demands of the position with a guy on the street or an undrafted free agent or a seventh round pick or a free agent, Nick Folk being the perfect example, that's why it was a bad pick. So I think Light, the only way he's going to assess that pick is in its risk. Was it worth the risk? I don't think he's going to bash the choice of Aguayo and the scouting of Aguayo. I think he's going to bash himself for the risk option that he took, which was bad from the start and proved to be awful. So that's that on Jason Light. I don't think any of this Aguayo stuff affects his contract with the Glazers. Of course, many of you realize Jason Light, to the best of our knowledge, is in the final year of his deal, a four-year deal that he got when he signed here with Lovie. And will it be renewed? We assume so, but it hasn't happened yet, so you never know. There's been certainly been some high-profile general managers that have been booted in this league in Carolina, Dave Gettleman and Dorsey in Kansas City, guys from winning programs. So you never know. I doubt it. I don't think there's anything to that. Dirk Cutter likes working with Light. Light is a very powerful general manager, whereas Gettleman and Dorsey might not have been as powerful as Light, believe it or not. But I think Light's on good footing. Now, in that game, Friday night's game, a lot of good things, a lot of positive. The offense moved the ball. Look, they got the ball. They got the rock out of the gate. They were ready to go. The whole theme of Dirk Cutter, many ways last year, but even more so this year, like we saw in Hard Knocks, start fast. The talent is there. That's what he says in the opening of the Hard Knocks episode. We got more talent in this room than we've ever had before. Cutter continues to put pressure on himself and on the team, and he doesn't care. And that's one of the things I love about Cutter. There are a lot of coaches who are very, very eager to downplay what their team can do. They want to temper expectations. They want to lower expectations, at least publicly. But Mr. Cutter, he's all over it. He's telling everybody, we got more talent than we know what to do with. We are a loaded team. Every time he can say it, even on NFL Network last week, Cutter said, our defense, man, you look at Brent Grimes, Hargraves, Levante David, Gerald McCoy, Quan Alexander. These are Cutter's words. Cutter said, we got a lot more talent than people think we do. And you know what? He's probably right. He's probably on the money there, because if those guys play up to their capabilities, that's pretty much five Pro Bowl talents. That's five out of your 11 is star talents on every level of the defense. And of course, the Bucs have other guys too. Robert Ayers, Will Golston might be the best run stuffing defensive end in the league when he's on his game. So there's a lot there, but I love that Cutter won't drop expectations. He won't even play the one game at a time card, which Greg Schiano played constantly. It's a one game season. I am only talking about opening day. No. Cutter is all about the big picture and embracing that pressure, which I think is very good for the team. Now, that fast start, the Bucs came out, they marched the ball down the field to the 2-yard line. And that was after starting, I believe, on their own 6. Ryan Smith, another nothing special kickoff return. He was actually tackled by Kendall Beckwith on the play, the Bucs rookie linebacker. Beckwith was called for a block in the back, and that foolish block in the back knocked him off balance, and he ran right into Smith. So it was really a comedy of errors on the opening play, a rough debut for Beckwith. Hopefully he forgot about it. And he did get 30-plus snaps, which was a big deal for him coming off ACL surgery in November. Pretty darn stunning to do that. And it looks like he came out of it pretty well. That's what Dirk Koetter said on Saturday. So that's upside for him. But going back to the offense, they came out firing. It looked good. You know, the running game, you know, they didn't break off any big runs. It looked a lot like last year's running game in many ways. Doug Martin, Jaquizz Rodgers, they averaged 2.8 yards a carry. Now, you can say, Martin looked great, man. Joe, small sample size. You're an idiot. Blasting on Doug Martin again. But you know what? He had four carries for 2.8 yards a carry. Now, nobody ever said he didn't run hard, but you can find a lot of guys to run hard in this league. You got to produce. Now, we could dissect Martin's four runs. He made a nice spin move on Geno Atkins in the backfield and got past him, turned what could have been a one-yard loss or a no gain if he didn't get out of the spin into a five-yard gain. Wonderful play. Wonderful, talented play. He also ran left, had plenty of room. Mike Smith beautifully sealed the edge for him, a wonderful run call. And off goes Martin. He's got a head of steam. He's one-on-one with a cornerback. He's even got a little bit of an edge on him, and he cuts back inside toward the defense. Come on, Doug. If he kept going outside, he would have had at least two, three more yards, and he should feel confident in being able to beat a cornerback to the edge, or at least strong-arming him off the edge. He's stronger than most corners, for sure. It was not a good run. So he had a good one, a bad one, a couple of solid runs on top of that. But not a great day for Doug Martin, not a great day for Jaquizz Rodgers, who also ran hard. You know, got some tough yardage in. I'm not trying to be overly critical of these guys, but we're looking for greatness here. And that drive was made on the passing game. And Jameis looked fantastic. From the opening throw, rolling right, a lot of poise there. He did take a shot on the play. Held the ball just long enough to get it where he wanted to Mike Evans. And the only negative was the end of that drive. Now, the Bucs in that situation, they're not really play calling necessarily. And it's important to understand that. You got Jameis recognizing Evans on the edge, one-on-one with a cornerback on the left flank, rather. And that was Adam Pac-Man Jones. First throw was high and off target. Second throw was too low and not where it needed to be for Mike Evans to go up against 5'10" Adam Jones, who's 34 years old. Doesn't mean he's not a great athlete, but come on. Mike Evans, that's money. That's why Jameis threw it there twice. That is a pass the Bucs need to convert at least 75% of the time, and they were 0-for-2. So that was the only negative, but I was impressed with Joe Hawley. Let's hear it for the comeback of Joe Hawley, a guy who got pushed around a little bit last year. Dirk Koetter said he was weighing like 270 pounds. He looked pretty darn solid at center, filling in for Ali Marpet. I was very encouraged by that. Very encouraging. Because let's face it, we really don't know what's going on with Marpet, and ankles can be weird. Sweezy, you know, he did not look good. Not a special day for J.R. Sweezy. Go back and watch the game. Got blown up a couple of times, running game, passing game. That's okay. You know, this is what this is for, to adjust and get back in the swing. Donovan Smith put Michael Johnson on his ass two times. I detailed it on JoeBucksFan.com in a post. I think it's titled like 9 Things You Might Have Missed Out of Friday. Really good stuff from Donovan Smith. And, you know, the Bucs dropped a lot of passes outside of just Adam Humphries with the first team, the Freddie Martinos of the world, Josh Huff, whatever. But the number 5 receiver spot, yeah, that still sticks in my craw, as Ira Kaufman would say. Still sticks in my craw because it's been an important position for the Bucs for the last 2 years because they haven't had the depth to fill in there successfully. And it really, really hurt them. This year, I don't see it either, a number 5 receiver. Right now, Bernard Reedy, after a few good catches, is the guy sort of in the lead. But I don't really know what that means. I don't know. I still don't get that, why they didn't do a little better to get some talent in here. But there's still time. You know, they got Cecil Shorts last year, who was a smart signing. That was a very smart signing, a veteran, a guy who had come off catching balls in the previous season, but he just got hurt. He pulled his hamstring on his very first catch, and then he came back successfully, and then, you know, horrific knee injury. But maybe there's a Cecil Shorts out there this year to play number five receiver instead of a little higher up on the depth chart, because they shouldn't need that this season. Now, the Bucs are in Jacksonville this week. Joint practice today, Monday, with the Jaguars. Tomorrow with the Jaguars. Wednesday's a day off. Thursday night, NFL Network, Bucs at Jaguars preseason game. Now, they did this last year, and it was very successful per Dirk Koetter and the team. The team likes playing against another team, and you know, just the excitement of that, the unpredictability of it, the ability to test yourself mentally a little more than when you maybe know what your defense is going to be doing or your offense is going to be doing, and vice versa. But they like this kind of work, and Koetter felt the team bonding at the hotel was very positive last year, and it was a good thing. And I agree. Probably the highlight for me for last year was on the practice field in Jacksonville, Jameis just chewing out Austin Seferian Jenkins and not letting up. It wasn't just for one play. He was yelling at him when he was on the field with the second team. And I was the only one who wrote about it. I couldn't believe that it didn't show up anywhere in the media. It was such riveting stuff. It would be like seeing a car crash and not writing about it. You know, I know some of the reporters don't always watch what's going on in the field, or they're busy tweeting and they miss stuff. I don't really tweet during practice because I want to watch practice, but usually I'm shooting video so I can go back and look at stuff and hopefully capture something I can share on YouTube or on JoeBucksFan.com, but mostly because I like to go back and look at what was really going on. So, but I don't usually miss anything that would be significant, and that was so significant last year. It was really said a lot for what was going on behind the scenes with ASJ, even 2 weeks into training camp. Interesting stuff, how that can linger even beyond him getting kicked out of OTAs by Dirk Koetter last year. That was a riveting moment from Jacksonville. But a funny thing this year, and you're going to hear less reporting from Jacksonville this year on what goes on in practice because of Tom Coughlin. The Jaguars apparently have changed their rules for media. I was going through the list of rules to go to these practices. I won't be there today. I'll be out there tomorrow. No, one of the probably the funniest thing is no sitting, quote unquote, no sitting for the media unless you're in the bleachers. So in Jacksonville, you got to understand it's wide open. There's no sunshade. There's no shade, no overhang for media. You're just out there pounding it in the sun. Practices from 10 to 1 is what the schedule is. And you're out there grinding, no shade. You got to sweat your ass off and work it and whatever. That's it. Okay. But no sitting, which I'm assuming means you can't kneel down on the ground. Tom Coughlin and the Jaguars, they want everybody walking around on your feet, which was just so bizarre. I had to read that a couple of times. But Coughlin does not allow video of what they call team periods. So when the team's out there doing work, 7-on-7, 11-on-11, against the Bucs, whatever, you can't film the Jaguars. And it says in the details, you can't report on it. In what goes on in those team periods in any sort of specificity. So don't expect a ton out of Jacksonville. I don't know if all the Bucs media will adhere to the rules and whatnot. We'll see about that. Or maybe they relax them for the Bucs versus instead of the Jaguars media. I don't know, but we'll find out when we get there. But again, I wouldn't expect the video that you usually see out of camp and some other types of reporting as far as formations and whatnot. You know, which we like to get into, and it doesn't mean that we're giving much away or other media give stuff away, but it's nice to put out what you see. And in Jacksonville, you can't do that the way you can in Tampa. So that's just something for the fans to note. Also in the game, defensively, you know, we got a lot of pushback on a story I wrote about the running defense, the rush defense of the Bucs. A lot of people thought it didn't look good. They got gashed. You know, Cincinnati moved the ball. You can't overreact to that, and you can't look too deep into it, and you can't be too negative. You know, we get accused sometimes as Joe Bucs fan of being too negative. I wrote a story saying the run defense was better. They had something to sink their teeth into as far as improvement went. Last year, they averaged 4.4 yards a carry, as I mentioned before. It was better Friday night. I think it was 3.8 yards a carry. They didn't let up a long run. Yeah, so I think there was a 9-yarder in there, maybe one 11-yarder. But they had some, it all averaged out to about 3.8 yards a carry. And there were a lot of positives to take away there. So you got to look at it at least that way. There were some positives. Chris Baker is not a positive. Dude did not play well. Didn't look hungry. Let's put it that way. Didn't look hungry. His first day he was supposed to practice in pads with the Bucks, he took the day off. Preseason game, man, if that's his, I know that that's not Chris Baker's 100% effort. He's a veteran. He's known for not liking to practice. He's known for being a game day performer. We'll see what happens in the real games. But I really was not concerned with the Bucks' run defense. It's nice to see him go three and out and all that, but not a time to be concerned. These guys aren't working on any kind of game planning. They're just strictly working on technique and blowing off the ball. And sure, some guys were manhandled here and there, but not really concerned about it in the run game. To be fair, yes, I said J.R. Sweezy on the other side was blown off, but for a guy who's known for his strength and for that sort of nasty grit, I didn't see it in the way that the Bucks have described it and his teammates have described it on Friday night. So, but it's also early, and that's what makes this so nuts. But that's what we do, man. That's why you're listening to the podcast, is because you're obsessed with this stuff. You live this stuff 24/7. And frankly, that's one reason I love our sponsors, Lakeland Auto Mall and Discount Garage Doors, is because they are 24/7 obsessed with greatness kinds of companies. LakelandAutoMall.com, DGDoors.com, that's where you want to go. And remember, at LakelandAutoMall.com, get your lowest internet price and then call Sean Sullivan, say Stick Carriers, and you've got an extra $500 off. Let them know you're a Stick Carrier. And of course, mention Joe Bucks Fan at Discount Garage Doors, and you're going to get 10% off. So discounts for just for listening to the podcast, which is pretty darn cool. Now, the Bucks and Hard Knocks. I haven't weighed in on Hard Knocks, and I thought it was great. I don't know about any of you, but I thought it was phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. Sure, we all want more. We want to see more. But I thought it was great. The relationship with Jameis and Cutter, you got a couple of layers there that you would never get otherwise. You got a look, a little, it was short, but I think we'll see more of it. A little look at Todd Monken and how he coaches these receivers in the film room and his intensity. I thought that was great. And, you know, having seen a lot of that from Monken in person, I'm glad that fans got a chance to see some of the intensity and the fire there, and I hope we see more. Also, it was really good to see Jeremy McNichols, get a little taste of him, and just all the other guys. The Riley Bulla story was really interesting, was funny. Gerald McCoy, I thought, came off as very likable. Some of his family moments there were extra touching. You know, you're always going to get a little touching with little kids. But I just thought it was a little bit extra. I thought McCoy showed up well. And I think it was very good for the Bucks. That's my point. Good for the Bucks. The ratings were apparently good. And I can't wait for Tuesday. You know, I got my DVR set. I'll be home after practice. And I really can't wait. So that's it was all positive. I can't see any kind of negatives whatsoever. As far as going back to the game, Mr. Charles Sims ran tough up the middle. One run was really fantastic. If you go back and look at it, where he gets hit and then he balances himself on the ground with one hand in a crowd and takes off from there. Really special stuff from Charles Sims. And I don't think that opened anybody's eyes within the organization, because Dirk Cutter, as I've said many times, he loves Charles Sims. And they have a lot of respect for what that guy can do. His accomplishments in 2015 were stunning. 500 yards in the passing game, 500 yards in the running game, 5 yards a carry. You don't see that every day. And Sims is a super quiet guy, doesn't like the media. You're not going to see him on Hard Knocks. He's just a super, super quiet guy. But he plays angry, he plays hard. And yeah, he dances too much. The shouts of Twinkle Toes at the Stick Carriers watch party were hilarious when Sims had some success on Friday night. I was out there with Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com. We had a good time. It was great being around the fans. At least 250 had showed up out there. But Sims, somebody to watch. The whole running back situation is something to watch. We only saw Jeremy McNichols for two plays. He ran right and got stuffed. And he had one up the middle where you could see the burst. But again, that's late in the game against, I think he had 11 yards, but that's against guys who are going to be working at Alamo Rent-A-Car and moving mattresses and going back to grad school. So it's hard to put much stock into that stuff. But we're marching on, and this podcast marches on as well. You can follow us, not follow us, but you can subscribe on iTunes or listen there. We're also on Google Play. You can listen there, and there'll be some other platforms coming down the line as well. So all different ways to access. And we appreciate the thousands, really, that have listened to each of the first two podcasts. I've gotten some nice feedback, so I appreciate that. And we're going to have some guests coming down the line and do some more fun things as we get into the rhythm of the regular season. And, of course, it's always nice to be a little reactionary on a Monday when you got a Monday podcast and really let it rip in my own way. Almost like if you listen to Bucks Uncensored, I do get a feeling that this is going to be like one big Bucks take in some ways to start the podcast, and then we'll go from there to dissect it a little bit more. In Jacksonville, it's really a great opportunity for the Bucks. And if you think about it, Lovie Smith did not like joint practices. He didn't believe in it. He didn't believe in officials at practice. And Dirk Koetter loves having referees at practice. Lovie believed in practicing in the heat, the middle of the day, to get ready for game day. Dirk Koetter avoids it like the plague. If you go to Buccaneers.com, if you watch the Quan Alexander video that's up there, a new feature on Quan, you'll see a peek at those night practices where the Bucks have lights rolled into the practice fields at $1, and they do their walkthrough at 8:30 at night, 8 o'clock at night, 8:30, like 8 to 9:30, I think is the walkthrough time. So that's pretty darn special and really shows you that Koetter is committed to keeping these guys fresh. Even if it's just a psychological edge that they believe that they're not drained, it makes a difference. But doing a walkthrough at 4 p.m. on a sweaty August afternoon is a lot different than 8 o'clock at night. And it does make a difference, but it's just interesting the contrast that Lovie Smith didn't believe in any of that stuff. So I don't know. Thank heavens for Dirk. Let's just leave it at that. All right. Other stuff out of the game. Nothing really too crazy to talk about. The backup quarterback situation doesn't stress me out because I really didn't think Ryan Griffin was going to make the team. And frankly, he shouldn't have thrown that ball. He knew he had a guy breathing down his neck, that it was a sack fumble waiting to happen. He held it a little too long and he had that internal clock going. And yeah, he got the pass off and he got hit and he got crushed and he's injured. It's bad luck, but it's also a ball that should have been tucked and run. So, that's the deal. But I didn't think Griffin was going to make it. Fitzpatrick threw a pick six. That's Ryan Fitzpatrick. We never expected any kind of miracles with the guy. But again, it's just preseason and Ryan Griffin getting hurt. It sucks for him. I don't think they're going to keep three quarterbacks. There's really no reason for it. And Fitzpatrick's now got the job, it seems, because that's just the way it is. Beckwith, we're going to see more of him coming up on Thursday. Something to really watch for. Kendall Beckwith, he's going to play more strong side linebacker with Devontae Bond getting hurt. That's going to be really a big key defensively on Thursday. And we're going to have to just keep watching the cornerback play because Jacksonville's got weapons, a lot of weapons, a lot of guys hungry and a very deep receiving core there with guys fighting for jobs. Ryan Smith, who's probably going to get a ton of snaps with Judah J. Barima, and Brent Grimes will surely still be out with his healing shin. It's going to be a big night for him. So lots to look forward to this week. Hard Knocks, more practice. We'll be giving it to you at JoeBucksFan.com. As always, thanks for your support. Thank you to Discount Garage Doors and Lakeland Auto Mall, the great guys who let me drive that Mustang Roush. So much fun. I had to give that back on Wednesday of last week, and I'm still kind of bummed out. I step on the gas on my Ford Fusion, and it's not a Mustang Roush. I'll leave it at that. All right, Bucks fans, thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.